From KALW News in San Francisco, this is Cross Currents. Context, culture, and connection from around the Bay Area.
Oakland. I'm from East Oakland.
I live on Belvedere Street, two blocks up from Haight.
I'm from the Sunset.
The foggy inner Sunset.
Coming up, painters work to complete a West Oakland mural after one of its artists was murdered.
I don't feel any less safe than I did the morning before Antonio got shot.
Then we hear the latest on a controversial plan to ship coal through West Oakland.
So a lot of lawyers are definitely swarming around Oakland right now. There's really billions of dollars at stake.
And we take a closer look at one of the most visible political billboards in the Bay Area.
The Grand Lake is unique. It has this huge marquee right alongside the freeway and a major thoroughfare. It just sort of evolved by accident.
We're all over Oakland today on Cross Currents. Tomorrow, community members will officially unveil West Oakland's newest mural. It was designed by local middle school students to not only bring color to a gray underpass under the 580 freeway, but also to display what those students want from a safe and thriving neighborhood. While the artists were at work in late September, tragedy struck. One of the muralists hired for the project, Antonio Ramos, was shot and killed in the middle of the morning while painting the underpass. KLW's Jeremy Dalmas reports on how the community has carried on.
West Street underneath the 580 freeway in West Oakland isn't big, but it's busy. The on-ramp is right here. About 10 feet off the ground, David Burke is perched on scaffolding with a paintbrush in his hand.
I've lived here for 15 years. This is my home. I love this city.
He looks down from the portrait he's working on, then wipes some of the orange paint off his brush. The full mural is a West Oakland scene, complete with Victorian houses, birds, tree-filled streets, and four giant children. Students at West Oakland Middle School designed the piece, and each of these four figures are superhero children who use their powers to help keep the neighborhood clean, healthy, and safe.
I really feel like as artists, it's part of our job to shape the communities that we live in and share our talents with the communities.
Burke is the art director for this project, and he's been working on community murals for 20 years. This one is part of a set going up on underpasses all over the neighborhood. He met Antonio Ramos while painting the first mural in the series, just two blocks away from here on San Pablo Avenue.
He rolled up on his skateboard and was really excited about what we were doing. Really talented artist. He brought smiles to everybody's faces. He painted on anything he could get his hands on. We really, really miss him.
On the morning of September 29th, Antonio Ramos was shot and killed while painting here. Burke remembers the moment it happened.
I was here, but I was on the other end of the wall. The wall's 200 feet long. And so I heard the shot. I ran down and found my friend lying in the street.
Like many people around here, he's still in shock.
Whatever exchange took place between Antonio and the suspect was so small that nobody working even had a chance to turn around. It lasted a few seconds, and it was over.
Now, in addition to the paint buckets, the entire length of the block is lined with flowers, candles, incense, and memorials. People honk as they drive past. Now, there are security guards on each end of the block. Muralist Vanessa Espinosa says painting has been difficult.
Working here without him being here is very strange. You know, because we were like a team. We were the dream team. It's kind of like this very dark, cold place now. We're adding color and life to it, but it's been a struggle.
She says, in addition to praying for Ramos's family, she's been praying for the young man that shot him.
Because something is really missing from that person's life.
Just three houses down, James Pierce is less forgiving.
Because he definitely needs to be off the street. And never back on the street.
I find him taking out his trash as people walk their dogs and ride their bikes past us.
I live right here on West Street, maybe 100 yards from the underpass. Been here since 1998. But the murder of Antonio, I mean, it I've seen some things happen over the time that I've been here. Most of it you can almost predict, it's very predictable, but this is just really way off the chart.
Does it change your feelings about safety in the neighborhood, or is it just so much of an outlier that you think it doesn't at all? Or
it doesn't change my feelings about, I think the neighborhood's getting safer, but you know, you still never know, you know.
When something like this happens, it just really hits very close to home because this is the very thing that you're trying to prevent.
The nonprofit that commissioned the mural is called Attitudinal Healing Connection. It's just two blocks away from the underpass. Amana Harris is the executive director. She says it's been hard to deal with the media coverage.
It just shed such a negative light on Oakland, but it never talked about any solutions. You know, it never talked about any of the people that are working hard to make our city better.
That's why the mural shows these four superhero children. Each one has a backstory. Erica Wheeler-Dubin, who heads communications for the nonprofit, reads me one of them.
Emilio is a young Mexican-American boy who is the earth sign. He uses the music from his purple and blue car to spread joy, peace, and love.
Beneath the underpass, muralist David Burke is putting the finishing touches on that very superhero's orange beanie. I ask him how he feels about his own safety.
You know, as public artists, street artists, there's an unspoken contract between ourselves and the public that while we're working, they're going to leave us alone, look out for us. And I don't feel any less safe today than I did the morning that we all came out here on Tuesday morning before Antonio got shot. We just have to trust that.
Art, connection, and trust. That's what everyone here hopes will keep these blocks safe and thriving. Under the 580 in West Oakland, this is Jeremy Dalmas for Cross Currents.
Find more about the Oakland Superheroes Mural Project and how to support Antonio Ramos's family at klw.org. Click Cross Currents. This is Cross Currents. I'm Hannah Baba. There's a big controversy developing west of the new mural at the site of the former Oakland Army base. It's a plan to develop the waterfront, in part as a port where coal from Utah can be shipped overseas. The project, called Oakland Global, is being developed by longtime Oakland businessman and sometime political appointee Phil Tagami, along with a company called Terminal Logistics Solutions. Exporting coal could generate nearly $3 million in annual property taxes and thousands of jobs, according to Tagami. And there's a huge potential market. Over 40% of the world's electricity is generated by coal. But the idea of running fossil fuels through a community that already suffers from elevated levels of asthma and other health conditions is extremely unpopular with many residents, the Sierra Club, the Alameda Labor Council, and Oakland Mayor Libby Schaff. She sent an email to Tagami saying, quote, "We will not have coal shipped through our city." Reporter Darwin Bond Graham has been covering this story for the East Bay Express. He spoke with KLW's Ben Trefney from Oakland.
Why would there be the push to try to export coal out of West Oakland where there are already so many health concerns? I mean, there are already ports in Stockton and Richmond and Long Beach that export coal, and there's one in the works in Washington State right now. Now, why not do this elsewhere on the coast?
Yeah, there's really not a large number of opportunities for the coal industry to export their product. Their product is no longer wanted in the Western United States. They have a declining market here. So the only place they have to sell it now is really Asia. So they're seeking access to ports on the U.S. West Coast. They've been defeated in Washington State and Oregon from building and expanding significant coal facilities there. And in fact, just last year, the Port of Oakland rejected a request by Bowie Resource Partners, the coal company that owns these mines in Utah, to build an export facility at the Howard Terminal at the Port of Oakland. So the Port of Oakland itself rejected a coal export proposal last year. So this company has been trying for a while now to gain access. And so I think what we're seeing is sort of an industry that's really desperate to market its product. The company has a high level of debt. They need to sell their product overseas to pay back their loans. And so this latest scheme to export it from the Army base, it's all part of that desperate push by the coal industry.
So you found that three members of the Oakland City Council who have expressed opposition to coal exporting out of Oakland have been investigated by a law firm that's tied to the coal industry. You reported that they're looking into communications with the Sierra Club and other groups that are opposing the operation. What could they be looking to find there?
Yeah, I would love to know the answer to that question, actually. This is one of the most intriguing things about this whole situation is this law firm that I've never heard of. Holland and Hart, they're based in Denver, and they started submitting records requests to the city of Oakland for very detailed records, text messages, voicemails between city council members, between their staff, and between different organizations or anyone who's known to be an opponent of coal shipments through the city. So yeah, I got curious and looked a little bit into it. Holland and Hart, their major clients are coal, oil, and gas companies. They've worked for investment banks that make large loans to the coal industry. I put the question to all these different parties, but none of them would actually answer. So we, at this point, we really don't know what this law firm is looking for and who they're doing their work for. But we do know that it's been stated sort of on the sidelines that if the city attempts to block coal shipments through Oakland, then there could be a lawsuit for breach of contract. There could be a lawsuit around the federal preemption. So people say that cities can't bar the shipment of commodities on railways because they're federally regulated. So there could be some sort of lawsuit on those lines. So a lot of lawyers are definitely swarming around Oakland right now and looking closely at this issue because there's really billions of dollars at stake in the long term.
That's Darwin Bond Graham, a reporter for the East Bay Express, who has been covering the controversy around shipping coal through West Oakland. In 2012, the California legislature passed a resolution against coal exports. In 2014, the Oakland City Council did the same. It kind of shakes down as something of a battle, which I think would end up in court either way, between governments and industry.
Yeah, it does kind of look that way, and it looks like a battle that's being waged around values at this point. And this is the environmental question of our time. So it looks like people on the environmental and labor side here who want to stop shipments of coal, they're saying, you know, this is about climate change, it's about the environment, and it's about us really doing our part, you know, not to contribute to that problem.
At the same time, currently, within the U.S. alone, more than 80% of energy comes from fossil fuels. And in 2008, for example, nearly 50% came from coal itself. So it's an interesting philosophical argument then about what's right to do for the future versus what's necessary to do now.
Yeah, it is. But there is the fact that we really can't burn all the coal that's available in the ground. We simply can't. The science at this point shows that if we dig up all of the fossil fuels in the ground that are currently available to us under our existing technology and that are economical right now to mine and process, we will have burnt more than our carbon budget and life on Earth will become very difficult, if not impossible. And so I guess the question boils down to like, which projects do we like not give the green light to, you know? And so in this case, the developers and the coal company behind this and the Utah counties, they're saying, look, this is our economic lifeblood. We want this to happen. And it's really not going to make that big of an impact in the grand scheme of things. And people on the other side are saying, no, it's going to be a big impact, and we need to try to do everything we can to stop contributing to climate change and the other types of pollution born of burning coal.
And that brings up a really interesting point that involves the governor of the state of California, too, because Jerry Brown recently told a Vatican symposium that 90% of the world's coal should remain unused to avoid further global warming. But at the same time, the same governor is a longtime collaborator with Phil Tagami in the city of Oakland on state boards and commissions. And in fact, the two of them are investors in an Oakland office building. And so they have had a long-standing relationship. Where does the governor stand on this? Has he come out on one side or the other?
Yeah, you know, I don't think he's actually made his position on this project public yet. And I have heard from opponents of the project that they would definitely like to hear where he stands on it. But you're right. I mean, there appears to be maybe call it pressure or something. He literally is a business partner with Phil Tagami, the developer of the Army base. They're longtime buddies. And in fact, Phil Tagami probably wouldn't be in the business position that he's in today were it not for when Jerry Brown was mayor of the city. And he made numerous deals, he and the council, you know, with Phil Tagami to fix up the Fox Theater and do all sorts of other large-scale redevelopment projects that pretty much built up the capital base from which Tagami is now using to redevelop the Army base. So yeah, this all really does go back to that personal relationship and business relationship that they've had for a long time together.
So what's next in this process on where we determine whether or not coal is going to be exported through West Oakland?
Well, the city council and the mayor are going to make some kind of decision by about the end of this year. No one really knows yet what that decision is going to be. And as we said, lawsuits could fly either way. If they ban coal, the developer and the company behind the export plan and the Utah counties, they could file suit. If they don't ban coal shipments through Oakland, the environmental and community and labor organizations may very well also file. In fact, they already have threatened to file a lawsuit, and they filed an action in Alameda County State Superior Court recently to reserve their right to file an environmental lawsuit. So it definitely looks like either decision the city council makes, this battle is just beginning.
That was East Bay Express reporter Darwin Bond Graham speaking with KLW's Ben Trefney. Find links to his stories on Oakland's coal controversy at klw.org and click on Cross Currents. This is Cross Currents. I'm Hanat Baba. And politics don't stop when you leave the Port of Oakland. And in the lead up to elections, political messages come at you from everywhere. They jam up your mailbox, talk at you during your favorite TV show, and spark conflict on your Facebook page. And in Oakland, they appear in a much more unlikely place. KLW's Ryan Miller takes us there.
Just northeast of Lake Merritt, across the 580 freeway, you really can't miss it.
It's very public. I know that I see it every day coming home from work.
There's a variety of messages. This is one of the few places, I guess, in this neighborhood that has such kind of has some social conscience to it.
Yes, I do recall some inflammatory political messages, all very left, throughout the years.
From my apartment window, I can actually see the Grand Lake neon signs.
This is Alan Michon. I've been the operator of the Grand Lake Theater since 1980. And I started posting political messages on the marquee on the day that the so-called Supreme Court stopped the counting of votes in Florida in 2000. The first message was, "This is America. Every vote should be counted."
We're in Michon's office in Alameda. We're looking at photos of, I don't know if they're all the messages that ever appeared on the marquee, but many, hundreds of them anyway. How many do you think there have been?
I have no idea. At least a few hundred.
Okay, so let's go through a few of these. And I know you also sometimes are very local.
Some of the local things we've talked about are the parking issues. As far as nationally, we railed against the war constantly. Here's a good one. Truth is to the Bush administration as sunlight is to Dracula.
But the majority of the marquee messages have a single focus.
One of the big issues that I have focused on over the years with the marquee is to point out that American elections are absolutely fraudulent. And I am extremely concerned about the fact that the use of electronic voting machines and electronic tabulation of votes has destroyed the freedom of the citizens of this country.
So Michonne has a very big, very visible platform to broadcast his political opinions. And what does the city of Oakland think about that?
The city is in no way wanting to curtail the public's right to free speech, and that marquee is one venue for doing so.
Scott Miller works with the City of Oakland's Planning and Building Department, which regulates signage.
What it says is really not within the purview of zoning to dictate. We don't dictate what some business owner should say about their business. We just define parameters for size, and we do not deal with the content.
So, what do you need to know before putting up your own political poster or flyer?
Those generally would fall under the special sign category, and there really is no code spelled out.
Miller thumbs through his document of zoning regulations adopted in the early 1990s.
The code provides some discretion. The allowance says special signs shall be limited to the area of display surface, number, location, and height, and kind of mobility, illumination, and material that are customarily and necessary to the purposes they serve. So,
are you following this?
That's a lot of bureaucratic gobbledygook. I don't know if the city's ever been sort of forced to indicate exactly what that means, but it certainly allows some flexibility, and it would probably, if called upon, allow the city to apply some discretion.
In Oakland, for signs relating to elections, regulations require that they not go up more than 90 days before the vote, nor stay up more than 10 days after the vote. And they can't be bigger than 32 square feet. But according to Miller, given limited city resources, compliance is not heavily enforced anyway, unless there are a lot of complaints. That hasn't happened yet to Alan Michonne at the Grand Lake.
Another one, in a true democracy, the president is elected by counting votes and winning.
So, Alan, tell us how you really feel.
Well, I think I've said it.
In big, bold block letters, in Oakland, I'm Ryan Miller for Cross Currents.
Now, if you had a marquee, we'd love to hear what you'd put on it. Email us at news@kalw.org. Find us on Facebook and Twitter at KALW. Because of you, we can proudly say we're listener-supported public radio. Our team includes Leela Day, Audrey Dilling, Chris Hoff, Angela Johnston, Casey Miner, Drew Gwynn, Edwin Okongo, and Stephen Short. Today's show was engineered by James Rollins. The line producer was Jeremy Dalmas. Our managing editor is Jen Chien. Managing producer is Julie Kane. Ben Trefney is our news director. Our theme music is by the John Santos Quintet.
Why? Oh, why must time fly?
This music is by David Gans. He'll be joined tomorrow by songwriter Jim Page at the intimate Monkey House in Berkeley. They take the stage at 7:30. For Cross Currents, I'm Hannah Baba.
I got one eye open for the highway patrol. The other eye is open for that freeway sign. 300 miles and I'm making good time. Well, my stomach's growling, but my head's been fed. I'm going down to Eugene to see the Grateful Dead.